Welcome to the Tactical Security Podcast.
Welcome to Tactical Security, where we argue cybersecurity practices from a technical and managerial standpoint. Here's what you need to know about today's security tactics.
This is episode 6. During this episode, we're going to continue discussing the human attack surface.
So I'm Wolf. By day, I'm an advisory CISO.
I'm Dave. I work in cybersecurity professionally, but you may know of my work with Hack for Kids.
And today's guest, Ian Myers. Hey, Ian, welcome to Tactical Security.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me. This is awesome. And Dave, thanks for your work with Hack for Kids. That's awesome.
Oh, you're very welcome. And do you have kids?
I have many. We have 4, 22. I'm going to go completely off the rails. It's like 22, 12, 9, and 4.
So, well, the 9 and 12-year-old would love Hack for Kids. The 22-year-old might be bored, and the 4-year-old would be very confused.
Yeah, the 20, yeah. You know, the 4-year-old honestly might be the one that would get into it, but oh, yeah, she's something.
Well, if you want, after the podcast, I can give you some games and things to kind of start developing some skills. I did that with my 10-year-old now and detect too. So cool. So thank you for joining us. Why don't you take a minute to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks. Again, thanks for having me. This is really, really fantastic. My name is Ian Meyer. I'm the Associate Director for Security Assurance for Marriott Vacations Worldwide. That's my main day job. I always feel like I want to give the disclaimer because people go, oh, Marriott, didn't they have a... Well, we are the largest franchisor of Marriott properties, whatnot. We're the timeshare and resorts wing. It's separate company, separate ticker symbol. And the joke I always say is if you can go to a company where the board of directors is the same board of directors hearing about a massive breach and be on the security team where they're saying, don't let this happen at this company, to quote Ferris Bueller, it's very choice. I highly recommend it. So with that said, I lead a team that handles penetration testing, vulnerability management, and secure code development towers inside of the security structure. Then, as Wolf said, at night, my night gig is I am a course director for Full Sail University, teaching a couple courses, including Intro to Cryptography, Intro to Security, what we call Securing Systems and Data, in our IT and computer security programs and cybersecurity programs. And I'm also the president for B-Sides Orlando, at least currently. More news on that soon. And, you know, a family man, got a bunch of those kids. We homeschool, we do all that. And yeah, it's a busy life, but I very much enjoy it and get to do a lot of the things I love.
You know, I'm a Marriott employee alum.
Yeah.
I used to work at the Times Square, the Marriott Marquis in the Times Square.
Oh, nice.
Worked there through college. It took very good care of me. Yep. And also, I'm a Vacation Club's property owner.
Oh, well, thank you very much. So, yes. What is your favorite resort, if you don't mind asking?
We've been to a few, but we've been to some in Asia, and we've been to some, nice, like specifically Bangkok, and then also in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. I think the one that used to be owned was one of our favorite properties. I can't remember the name, but it was fantastic. It got sold.
Ah, okay. Sorry. Yeah, and that happens. We build new ones, and a lot of new stuff coming on the way. So thank you for your ownership and being a customer and an owner. So I like it there. We've got a great security culture, and it's one of the things that allows me to do stuff like this. My CISO encourages it. He says, please, as long as you're not talking specifically about our tactics and our, what we actually have built out, he says he sees it as a service to the community. So he says, go ye forth and do. And I said, great. So, I mean, that says a lot about the organization.
Absolutely. And our listeners are in for a treat for having you.
I hope so. I'll do my best.
One of the things we wanted to talk to you about, Ian, is you know, the entire theme this season is the human attack surface. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to get your definition. But I also know a lot of people equate the human attack surface to phishing. So I also want to have a conversation about how you guys are handling that, because it's very unique and novel, and I would say kind and correct way that you have fostered and created a security culture. So a little bit of a two-part question, right? How do you define the human attack surface, and what are you doing to protect that attack surface in your day job?
I love that question, by the way, because I spent some time doing kind of you know, a lot of shower thoughts around human attack surface recently, obviously with the ethical fisheries and just competing in the SECTF and just thinking about security outcomes. And I realized that that question, in my mind, the attack surface, I started thinking about with viruses and with the pandemic. I'm like, well, what are we dealing with? We're dealing with an immune system response, right? We're trying to teach the immune system what to recognize and how to work with our body to stop this. And you're going to say, you know, this is not a biology lecture. But the human attack surface, I started thinking about it, is relationships. Our body's relationship to our immune system, our relationships with our peers inside of our organization. And the more I thought about human attack surface, the less I actually started thinking about end users. And I started thinking about how are we building relationships and reducing friction and attacking specifically toxicity and negativity between departments, between IT groups, et cetera. So I really define it, the human attack surface, as the strength and bond of the relationship. The weakest point in the chain, if the relationship between the two other links is not strong, you're going to have that chain break. So to wrap up that thought, I was even thinking about this. This is being recorded. I don't want to say exactly what date unless you want to say it, but it is around the time of the great Log4j burning. And even as I sit in these meetings, I remind everyone, don't worry about talking about the skeletons in the closet. Don't worry about the things that you know should have been fixed. It is okay. We know that you had other challenges, other business issues, et cetera, and no one's here to point fingers right now. We're all here just to work together and help you. And you have to mean that when you deal with human attack service. You have to mean, I'm a security person here, and I'll give my CSO tremendous credit. One of the things he said on these group calls, and I'm talking about specific tactics, but it's worth praising. If you've got an issue where you can't upgrade a package, or you can't do this, or you can't do that because you're not given the resources, don't wave the security stick to say, you will go forth and do this. Say, who do we need to talk to and who do we need to work with to get you those resources? What case can we make to make your life easier and swing that security stick in the other direction? That's what I think of as the attack surface. Yeah, so what are we doing to strengthen? The second question being, what are we doing to strengthen that security culture? We're strengthening the security culture by again, building those relationships and changing the way we think about controls, right? So I did some work around building a concept I call ethical fisheries, in not attacking people for clicking on links, not shaming them, not causing a rift and friction between security, but instead leveraging them to say, hey, when you clicked on this link, why did you do it? And building a survey and building a form that says, hey, what made you click on this? Was it you were busy? Was it urgent? Were you between phone calls? And start getting feedback to understand what you can change in the company culture that makes people less susceptible to a phishing email. And then pairing that, instead of saying, oh, you clicked on it, it was your job to figure this out, when some of these fish are just so remarkably accurate at this point. Instead, sending phishing emails that are testing the controls. So domains that have been registered for 30, 60, 90 days versus domains that have been registered for a day versus did we have DMARC? Did we have SPF? Did we have some of these technologies set up that would have validated? Was it BIPI is the new one or BIMI? I'm sorry, BIMI is the new one. So did we have those technologies in place and did they get past our proxies, our web email gateways, our outbound proxy when it tried to phone home? At what point in the control chain did it get passed? And now we ask the user, hey, because this arrived in your email box, instead of saying you did a bad thing and you clicked on this, say, hey, our controls failed to stop this. Can you help us understand why? So we can go build better controls. So I try and tell my students at Full Sail, stop trying to build controls that will solve every problem. And stop trying to tell people that security is everyone's job. To an extent, yeah, that's true, but it's really your job. And your job, and it's mostly gaming and movie school, they're all gamers. And I say, what happens when a weapon is overpowered in a game? Like you get the sword of massive smiting and, you know, devil's breath, you know, whatever it is. And it turns out it just lays waste to everything. And without fail, they shout out, oh, the developers nerf it. I'm like, that's what you need to do to general computer systems. For most users, a MacBook Pro is wildly overpowered for what they need. Chances are day to day, a Chromebook or even an iPad would do everything they need to do. So you need to figure out ways to nerf that technology so they can do their job daily, feel good that they're safe, have very little friction, but still protect people. So that's the kind of work we're doing and the kind of culture we're trying to inspire.
I really like that. I mean, I'll be honest. I really love that. When you were talking a bit before about the openness in a meeting where it's kind of giving people an opportunity to be vulnerable and say, yes, we overlooked patching this one, or we, you know, we haven't been able to keep up with these things. It really, what I saw, at least what you're trying to do, and tell me if I'm wrong, is get people to, one, start to put their guard down, two, then now that their guard's down, they're going to be more revealing. So there's not going to be some, you know, work that they do kind of behind the scenes when nobody's looking to try to not look as bad. But if they could be like fully open with no penalty whatsoever, then you're going to do your job better securing things versus you got to keep running scans until, you know, you find the little few pieces of, you know, software that they missed.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And when I gave the talk on ethical fisheries, I gave it for a local ISC chapter. And then I also gave it at Wild West Hackenfest recently. And I tell a story about, it wasn't fishing, but it was a help desk testing exercise. And I could name the name of the company. I don't have an NDA. I choose not to, because in the same vein, that's not kind. You know, there's people that would be involved that had nothing to do with what I'm about to say. But essentially I had an intern, we ran an exercise, we got it cleared with legal, we got it cleared up and down through HR, where their whole job was to call into the service desk and reset my password using publicly available information, you know, just pure OSINT, reset my security engineer password, which that should raise some alarm bells on its own. And if they were successful, you know, we figure out how to strengthen the controls. Great intern exercise, fun thing to do. It's how I like to structure intern programs. They have the really kind of crummy intern task, which is maybe 50% of their day, where it's like, oh, we really need to do this inventory and all this stuff. And then 25% is kind of a stretch goal project. And then 25% of their internship is something fun, something to keep them inspired, be like, that was really cool, I did this thing. So that was the really cool, I did this thing, where it was a social engineering exercise at a big company. So they do it. And when we're getting it prepped, the lawyers and the HR people say, well, you know, what do you think the chances are of them being successful? And I said, 100%, we will be successful, period. Absolutely. And they said, you're sure? And I said, yeah, no, we'll be successful. I said, and this is why the next part is so important. Whoever we are successful against, it is a get out of jail free card. Whatever they did, whatever they said, whatever they allowed, whatever they did wrong, they get that get out of jail free card. This would have been a fireable offense, but instead, I would like you to sit with us. And this was the plan. Sit with us, have a meeting. And we used to do these kind of lunch and learns, and we would sit and say, like, hey, what made you, you know, do this? And allow them to be able to be like, oh, I was really busy. I was going to lunch. The ticketing system wasn't working. I forgot this, that, and the other. And start talking about the challenges that come up day to day so that people can be aware of that. We were successful. I came in one day, found out they were fired, and I lost it. I said, what was unclear? And it turns out they didn't log a ticket. And in that case, it was a fireable offense. I said, but that was a get out of jail free card. And the reason it concerned me is now the help desk started to spread that security's looking for them. Don't tell security what's going on. Don't talk to security. And we had to undo that. So building that openness and that trust, the same is opposite. You do it wrong and you learn, you lose that valuable intel.
What's interesting to me about that story is if you tie that back to your definition of the human attack surface being the strength and the bond of human relationships, in a way, the leadership of the company did more damage to that human attack surface than an adversary would.
Absolutely. 100%.
And it goes back to what you were saying earlier, relationships. It's damaged that relationship to now IT feels like security is on witch hunts.
Yep. And one of the things I talk about in that talk is I feel like the phishing exercises as we understand them are more about budget and getting budget and scaring executives than they are about actual security outcomes. And I don't care for that because that only works for so long. You know, you have to improve the security outcomes, not get the money to buy a new tool. You can do more with relationships than you can with dollars. And that's all
true. You're here.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about that though, because as someone who cares about the dollars and,
sure.
Making sure that we can demonstrate success or demonstrate risk. Oftentimes when people think of the human attack surface, they're like, all right, how are we going to measure it? Well, we're going to measure it through phishing click rates. Okay. So the click rate went down. Maybe that means our human attack surface is better. That doesn't work for your definition, right? So what are some of the ways that you can measure and have a directional sense from a metrics point that human controls are going in the right way?
Yeah, that's a great point. One of the things that I endeavor to do is not worry about click rates. And to your point, because I think they're artificial. And here's why. Doing it right, I can never use the same tactics as the attacker. Or shouldn't, at least. Being able to use purely fear-motivated tactics where, your grandson's been kidnapped and you have to wire some money, or, your paycheck hasn't been deposited, or you've been terminated on a Friday. That's playing in easy mode. I can get almost 100% click rate in almost any environment, if the rules of engagement are wide enough. What I do like to use instead is the whole concept of security chaos engineering kind of took over my mindset in this, where I said, well, wait a minute, we're always going to have some new, unthought of, completely imaginative and creative attack. We're always going to have some new, from the Men in Black thing, there is always some laser ready to destroy this entire planet, but they don't know about it. We're always going to have that. So let's instead test the controls and show effectiveness of the previous investments. And I think this speaks really well to executives. Say, hey, remember that money, that $100,000 you invested in this security technology? We sent through this series of emails that is very similar to what an attacker sends, and it blocked 98% of it. Oh, and by the way, the 2% it didn't block through that test, we were able to refine that investment that you've already made and make it block 100% of it. And you start showing incremental improvement on investments that they say, oh, we spent that money. You're refining it. You're improving it. You're iterating it. You're maturing it. I don't necessarily care how many of my employees clicked on it. I care that you're telling me that similar attacks, new imaginative attacks, attacks we haven't imagined yet, my controls are being tested that I spent money on. And now they're seeing a control material, and some of the work that George and Sands and MITRE have done around the MITRE attack framework to be able to say, hey, we tested all of these and we can see that the tactics that folks use, I don't care what email they send, our controls are going to test it. And where they didn't, we've gotten feedback from the user as to what in their day made it difficult for them to discern this. So that's one of the ways I do it instead of just the click rate.
In all the different problems that you may face today in the space that you work in, what would you think is the most challenging problem?
In relation to the human attack surface for this season, speed. Speed. I think it's speed. We have become, I think, the pendulum of IT speed and delivery. We've painted this picture of DevOps, and we've painted this picture of, oh, we can make it more efficient, more efficient, more efficient. And at a previous company, I was presented within, rid of MPLS. I mean, so we can save all this money. We can move faster. We can get circuits up by switching away from, switching from MPLS to a different, you know, packet-based technology. And I said, okay, but that means we're going to have to scan all these firewalls for PCI now, these individual firewalls at the endpoint. And they said, oh, that's ridiculous. You don't have to do that. I said, no, we do. The reason I bring that up is when we think about speed and cost savings and automation, we really do need to start thinking much more heavily about abuse cases. How will people abuse this? How will attackers, who are still people, how will they will abuse it? And more importantly, how will our employees and our partners and our team members and our friends be impacted by these decisions of speed? Where we say, oh, well, we're just going to push it through a pipeline. It's going to run all the tests and everything's going to be fine. Okay. How did we validate that? How did we go back and audit it? I'll tie it back quickly to what's going on right now with Log4j. Everyone's going, oh, where do we have it? And everyone's kind of going, I don't know. Because the speed at which we've been deploying and integrating and bringing in vendors and offshoring risk and, you know, bringing in third parties and all this different stuff, the complex network by which all these tendrils reach out where this can exist, we've leveraged all that speed from those incremental gains, but we haven't slowed down. I'll end that on one note. Even when I have a leader that I don't disagree with, that I've worked with, I try and take positive things away from it. And I had a leader in one of my first IT jobs, and during a big data center move, they said, all right, everyone stop. We need to slow down to go faster. Everyone was trying to get systems connected and this, that, and the other. And like, we're going to start making mistakes as people are stepping on each other. We need to slow down to go faster. I think that's where we're at. I think we need to slow down to go faster and really understand a lot of these technologies and the impacts they have. And then we'll be able to deliver better security outcomes.
So to kind of sum it up, it sounds like what you're describing is our drive to adopt more, secure more, deploy more tech has not only created technical debt, which we're all familiar with, thanks to the TV show Silicon Valley, just kidding, but the security debt that comes with it, which I don't know if anyone's really talking about. This is the first I've heard someone talk about it.
Yeah, no, I you hit the nail on the head. I started thinking about, well, what causes technical debt, right? Well, total cost of ownership causes technical debt. And you think about somebody buying a car, and I love this example. You get, and I'm going to pick on the big four because why not? We write big enough checks to them. So one of the big four auditing firms, the person comes right out of college, afford it, and they probably can, but they don't take into account, oh, now BMW is charging me for CarPlay and I got to pay that on a lease. And oh, they're gathering telemetry data that I'm actually paying them for. And oh, you know, I have to make sure that I only get tires from them because it'll violate my lease. And there's all these other incremental costs that add up, and they don't look at it. They say, oh no, I've got a luxury car. It's beautiful. It drives fast. It's comfortable. It's fantastic. But in the end, when they go to turn it in, they at least go, oh, you're over miles and you need new tires and you didn't bring it in for oil changes when you're supposed to. So we got to fine you for that. We don't realize that this technical debt is being built while people are only looking at the advantages. And that's a very difficult thing to get leaders to understand. I tell my students, I don't think we have time to go into this game, but I very much enjoy doing it, is I ask them, how do businesses make money? And they give a bunch of, good answers, like, oh, make a product, sell a service, make a better product, make a better service. And I say, that's all great, but that's not how profit's generated. And they say, okay. And I say, profit's generated through risk. Businesses are in the business of taking risks. They say, I'm going to invest some money. I hope what I do with that money does well and people like it. And then I make money, but I could lose all that money. Without that dynamic, there is no business, right? So when you go to these business leaders and you say, hey, this one bad thing could happen if we don't upgrade this, they go, that's Tuesday. I've got, all these other problems going on. Talk to me when this is a potent problem, which is why you only see this uptick in technical debt review and fixing during big incidents like this Log4j. So yeah, I think it is a total cost of ownership, and you have to explain in very clear terms to leadership, you are going to make this decision, you are going to add technical debt, and to unwind it later is going to be incredibly expensive. So when you start talking about that in the terms of risk, I found that you get, you know, better outcomes than just, if we have a breach, it'll cost us $4 per record. And that's $1.7 million. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. That's a maybe. Tell me about what's happening today. So that's my thought on that.
Yeah, I really like that approach. You know, so oftentimes we think risk management is all about tagging a number to a record or you know, running a very complex formula and showing the executives the graphs and go, ah, yes, we'll do it. But the reality is it's a lot more, to your earlier point, it's a lot more about the human relationships. It's a lot more about making it salient. Mm-hmm. To bring this back down to the attack surface, mm-hmm. If there was like one tactic, right? Like one tactic our listeners could walk away from in terms of improving the human element in cybersecurity, what would you recommend? What where should they start? What is the tent pole in this philosophy?
Sure. And I think I have a pretty succinct answer for this. And it is a question, and it's homework that I'll give to the listeners. Anywhere where you feel like you're trying to work on a security issue and you're not getting the support, you're constantly getting pushback from this one team, I challenge you to instead flip the script and do this. Use that big pole in the tent, use that security cudgel, go to them and say, hey, what challenge can I solve for you? I can go to the board, I can bring this up. If you're telling me that, no, we can't do this, what is the reason why? I don't care that you can't do it. I don't care what else is going on. Is it a resource problem? Is it difficult? Is the knowledge, did it walk out the door and the only person that knew how to upgrade this system or care and feed for it doesn't work here anymore? Help me understand what that is and let me be an advocate for you to go get those resources. Go talk to those people. And one of the things I like to do, and I'll summarize it this way. When I first started a company and I'm trying to build relationships, the very first thing I ask them, or sometimes the last thing in the conversation, is I say, what does security do wrong that makes your life harder, and how can I fix it? And just by ending with the idea that security is not an infallible force that can rain down fire from the board, that, yeah, we understand that we make mistakes too. What am I doing that makes your day harder and how can I fix it? That immediately starts to reduce that human attack surface internally, because now you're removing friction, you're removing barriers. Often you're getting valuable feedback on things that are actually wrong. And if you turn around and fix it, you're going to be the first person they call to say, wow, you fixed my problem. I've got this other problem that might be a security issue. Can you help me with it? And that's going to change the tide.
That's such a good answer. do your homework, find out where the problem is and focus in on building relationships as you improve things. I think that's something that we can all take away. Ian, so great to have you on with us today. You know, to the listener, this has been Tactical Security with Dave and Wolf. Please do join us for future episodes where we will continue to dig into tactical tools and practices.
Ian, thanks for joining us today. Oh, sorry.
No, I was going to say thank you for having me. No, this has been fun. I love talking about this stuff.
It was great meeting you, and you know, hopefully we can have you on a future season. So with your insight. So thank you. Stay healthy, everyone. Question truth and be better.